embed accessing. BFBS Multimedia.
It's Multimedia on BFBS.com, on 34 or thereabouts transmitters around the world, and also at its brand new time, whether you're listening at 9:30 UK time on a Friday evening or the very early hour of 7 o'clock in the morning UK time. Welcome to the programme, and also, of course, as a listen again and a podcast. My name's Dave Raven.
And I'm Mark Phillips. Welcome along. We start with the latest and greatest, possibly, smartphone so far. We look at the Sony Ericsson M600i with DJ Howard Pierce.
And talking of phones, we're giving away three Philips decked and also Skype combined phones in our competition. And this month, you can win a boxed set of the Persuaders, the magnificent television series worth over £60.
And we've got news with an old friend of Multimedia from PC Pro. More about that one later.
Excellent. We start the programme, though. I've just come back from my 2 weeks of travelling through the south of France. And you, of course, during your holiday in Greece, were talking about internet cafes and security. The thing I found was the difficulty in being able to actually log on wirelessly in France, because the internet cafes just didn't allow me to have a Wi-Fi connection. And because I was wanting to actually administer my computer at home using a remote desktop type of thing, I needed Wi-Fi and not the standalone PCs. But what shocked me is the condition, just as you found, of the PCs in the various internet cafes.
I know, you'd think that if they do that, that somebody would come in as a matter of course and do basic updates once a week, or at the very least once a month, as we're always advising people to do at home. But from the ones I saw, I don't know what you found, but mine were definitely not up to scratch.
That's one thing I found. One of the internet cafes had Macs in it, and there I found that once you logged off, everything was removed. So all of the history, all the memory, all the things that you did were automatically removed, which I thought was a pretty good secure move. But when you were talking last month about how the lack of security and the computers you found with spywares and Trojans on them, and how worrying that is, and how you should be careful when you're travelling overseas, whereas you know on your own PC, or you should know, that it's actually up to speed with all of the patches and security software, and it's therefore pretty safe. Don't forget the machine overseas you're using may be compromised. And one of the listeners to the podcast sent a message regarding using a USB stick, really, for plugging into the side of the internet cafe computer, in which you could actually do your own things, which is not a bad idea, but not perfect, is it?
I mean, certainly you can get a version of Firefox, the browser, and there are certain email programs you can actually put on one of these removable email sticks. So you plug your email stick in and it actually runs the program on the stick. But the problem is that the underlying system, the network capability of the computer, of the PC, may still be compromised. If somebody is monitoring from that, then it may not give you all the protection that you'd hope was there.
I know we have different skill levels of listeners to Multimedia, from people who have probably got a computer perhaps in the last couple of months and are listening for the first time, and also with our new time schedule, we might be picking up new listeners too. So I think we better explain, just in case people are listening and kind of shaking their heads to you and I chattering away, the number of bits of malware and Trojans which can get onto a computer can affect the computer in different ways. Some, they compromise the machine by it becomes a robot and starts off sending lots of spam, which is a nuisance, and sort of adds to all the spam hurtling around the world. The other ones are far more dangerous, and they're the keystroke loggers, aren't they?
Yes, where they can actually, if you like, copy every keystroke that you do, dump it into a file, and then send it off to somebody who then analyzes it and looks for password and login combinations, which can happen. As always, a lot of this stuff is preventable, and one of the key things we always say on the program, if you haven't done this, if you've got a Windows machine, especially if it's Windows XP or Windows 2000 or Windows 98, go to the Windows Update site and make sure that you've got all the latest security updates from there. Also, make sure you've got an up-to-date antivirus scanner, which it's not just good enough to have one on there, it has to be updated regularly. All the main virus scanners pretty much now update every day or every other day to make sure that you're up to date, because new viruses and new variations of viruses are coming out all the time. So make sure you've got up-to-date virus and a subscription to an up-to-date service, and then check out anti-spyware products, and the ones we recommend are, first of all, if you're running Windows XP, get Windows Defender from Microsoft, which is free of charge if you're running Windows XP, and you can download it and that runs in the background. It's not enough, unfortunately, on its own, so we also recommend something like Spybot R&D, which is free, or LavaSoft's AdAware 6, again, which is available in a free edition. And if you put both of those on, and again, you have to run them regularly, you should be mostly protected.
I think with the three that you've mentioned there, and once again, we'll put the links on the multimedia website, so you haven't got to be scribbling furiously now. With the three that you've mentioned there, it covers you sort of belt and braces and a bit spare as well, because each of the various protection tend to have certain strengths and occasionally miss something out, but the other one should pick it up. And if you run them, as you say, regularly, I mean, the other big thing is that Windows had Patch Tuesday just this week gone, and so lots of updates there. Now, at the beginning, they caused some problems for some people and on some computers running Windows XP, especially Service Pack 2. However, I think that's all been fixed now, so if you haven't yet updated your computer, now is the time to do so.
And don't ignore it. If it says I need to do these updates, if Windows is telling you that I've got updates to install, do let it install those updates. Otherwise, you may not be protected against the latest viruses and vulnerabilities.
And if you've got, I know some households tend to have a sort of a batch of computers all over the place, don't assume that because it's the main one connected to the internet, that's the one therefore you should do. One of the biggest risks may be in the bedroom upstairs where the kids have got a PC, perhaps which you've handed on to them or something, and they probably spend more time on the internet than you do, and they probably also spend more time going to compromised websites where these trojans and various bits of malware tend to lurk to leap into your machine. So make sure that all the machines in your house are kept up to date.
This is BFBS Multimedia.
The humble mobile phone's gone from something that was a luxury item to something that pretty much is a necessity. But what you can do with a mobile phone's changing as well. It used to be just that you could make calls on it. Then you could play games on them. Then you could send text messages. You could take pictures with a camera. Now some mobile phones even give you a full email service. Somebody called me up. He's a DJ on London's Smooth FM, and he's called Howard Pierce. He's somebody I've known for a long time. And Howard said, look, can you help me out? Because I want to get a phone that does email, but I'm not sure what to get. And Howard joins me in the studio. We've tried a few things out. Welcome to Multimedia.
Thank you.
First of all, you're a difficult man to please, because the obvious thing to suggest is, OK, what about a BlackBerry? And you already knew people who've got BlackBerries.
BlackBerries are great. I mean, they are the market leader. I'm looking for something that does push email rather than I have to get the phone to go and pull something. There are now three options. What's wrong with a BlackBerry? Absolutely nothing, except for I'm 6'2". I'm a big guy. I've got big thumbs when it comes to pushing those tiny little buttons, and they're just too small. Simple as that. So I was looking for something that's more compact as a phone, because that's what I use it for as the main function, but I want push email to my phone, and I want something for business, not a toy.
Okay, so the first thing I looked at was Nokia are doing a BlackBerry-style phone, which was the E61, and you went off and had a look at that one, and again, you thought, well, it's not really for me.
Not at first. When I first saw the Nokia E61, I went, oh yes, quite like that. It's slimmer, and the keys are a bit fatter for, literally, as I was saying a minute ago, my big thumbs to get on. And my first impressions were pretty good. Now, there have been a couple of technical issues with the E61, according to all the experts that I speak to, but in general, it's a good phone. But it's really wide. It's very slim, but it's really wide, and it's a very big unit. A, in your hand, if you're going to try and use it as a phone, but where do you put it? In your pocket? Whatever. It's a large instrument.
Now, if you've never seen a BlackBerry or indeed one of these E61s, it's basically, they look a bit like a phone, only they're much wider, and the reason that they're wider is that they've got a full QWERTY keyboard built in. Admittedly, a very tiny one, but it does have one key for every letter of the alphabet, which means that using your thumbs, you can type emails faster in theory than you can by doing predictive text on your phone. So the problem, as I say, was Howard's got an enormous thumb. I'm holding my thumb up to Howard's, and Howard's thumb's about three times the size of it. So I heard about a new Sony Ericsson unit. This is the M600i, and it's a new departure for them because it's their first answer to the BlackBerry, and it's different in a number of ways. The first thing that you notice that's different is that it only seems to have a set of keys. You've got a row of five across and four down, and that's basically all the keys. So there aren't enough keys in theory to do the alphabet, but that was the first surprise that you had with it.
Well, surprise, yes. There's two letters to every key on here, and of course some extra functional keys as well. So you're starting to come back to what you think is going to be predictive text, and you've got to push the buttons a couple of times, but they're not. They're rocker buttons. Centralized, it's a QWERTY keyboard. So for instance, if you want to get the letter R, you push the right hand side of that particular key. If you want the letter E, it's going to be the left hand side. And they're rocker keys. And again, I looked and went, oh no, that's going to be really awkward. Do you know, you get it right within seconds. It becomes very easy, very comfortable, very quickly.
And of course, because there's a half the number of keys, they're much bigger than on the BlackBerry and on the Nokia.
They are indeed. So they suit what I want. Also, of course, more compact. Even though the keys are bigger, there's that much less of them. So therefore, the actual phone itself is smaller. So you have a large BlackBerry, you have a large Nokia E61. This phone is only about two-thirds of the size. It's very thin, it's very compact. And unlike both the BlackBerry and the E61, this comes with a stylus. So you can use it, because it's a touchscreen, and you can use it with a virtual keyboard as well as pushing the buttons. So you have two options to use this for email and all the other office functions that are on the phone.
Now, when I first took it out of its box, I looked at that touch screen and thought, I'm not sure if that's going to work or not, because half the time you're not going to want to get the stylus out. But I found very quickly that I was able to press most of the time without using the stylus, press the bit of the screen I wanted, and it just worked.
Simple as that, yes. You've summed it up perfectly. But in fact, I got very used to the stylus very quickly. One of the big negative points of this is, like a BlackBerry, like an E61, it's got a scroll wheel on the side, but it's on the left-hand side. And I'm right-handed, and I just didn't get it for a couple of days. And then I suddenly realized that when I'm using, as a right-handed person, the stylus, actually the phone is now in my left hand. And in fact, all of a sudden, that scroll wheel is in the right place. So it was a big negative to me when I first picked up the phone. And then suddenly I was using the stylus more and more and found that very comfortable and easy to use. And suddenly that scroll wheel was just where I wanted it.
Now, I mentioned at the beginning that these things aren't just phones, and there's a lot more functionality built into a device such as this.
There is. It's really a business phone, and Sony Ericsson now have a range of business phones. Hasn't got a camera in it. It hasn't got a lot of games. You can download more games. It is a music player, but it's made for the email, the office facilities, the fact that you can phone from around the world. It's a tri-band. It's an excellent office phone. Sound quality good on the entertainment. The games themselves, the main one that's on here is a golf game. Of course, you can download more. You can download loads and loads of stuff. There's an infrared facility. There's Bluetooth. There's a lot of good functionality on this phone.
And of course, it syncs with, if you're running Microsoft Outlook, it'll sync your contacts, it'll sync your calendar, and it'll sync your email, most importantly. So proof of the pudding is in the eating. You've had the phone now for a little while. Is it something you're going to buy?
Well, just finishing off on the email, you were saying it does sync up with your computer. It also will sync with Exchange 2003. The other thing is, it is BlackBerry technology. Don't reinvent the wheel. Both the E61 and this have gone to the market leaders and said, we can make our own, but actually, you've got it right. The customers are very satisfied with it. We'll lease that bit of technology from you. Let's go with that. It's nothing like going to the market leader and saying, it's a good product. We'll have that in ours. Thank you very much. And that's what Sony Ericsson have done here. And to answer your other question, would I buy this phone? The answer is yes.
If you'd like to find out more, we'll give you a link on the multimedia website. It's the Sony Ericsson M600i. And unfortunately, I've got to send this particular one back to Sony Ericsson right now.
PFPS Multimedia.
Competition time on Multimedia. And this month we're giving away three of the magnificent Philips VOIP ordinary decked phones, the 321 as it's called, the VOIP 321, which, as we mentioned last month, doubles up as an ordinary decked phone in the house, which is great to start with. It's cordless. And then by pressing a button, and as long as you've got broadband internet connection, it becomes your Skype phone. The question we posed was, what does decked, D-E-C-T, stand for? And again, as with so often with our competitions, we can gauge the popularity of the prize by the number of entries.
I can just about see you under that pile of them there.
Lots and lots of entries. So, three to give away. You go first, Mark. Who's the first one to win?
Okay. Give the answer, I suppose, shouldn't we?
That's very true, yes.
Yeah, DECT stands for Digital Enhanced Cordless Telecommunications. Or a cordless phone is another way. Anyway, here's hoping I win. Lucille Hayward, you have won. BFPO 39, SHCAC.
Well done, Lucille. Second one out of the box is Richie Judson. That name seems familiar. I think you may have won before, Richie. You're a tech EW specialist at Cranwell Sleaford in Lincolnshire. One of the listeners, the BFBS listeners, if you like, listening as a listen again services or a podcast here in the UK. Well done. A copy of the, not a copy, but a Philips VOIP dual phone on its way to you.
And finally, Corporal Mark Broughton, or Broughton, PROM department, Horsley Lines, SLB, Iraq, BFPO 645.
Well done, Mark. What we'll do, because your length of posting in Iraq may not be up to the period of the phone arriving there, and I have a suspicion somehow a decked cordless Skype phone is not going to be a huge amount of use while you're serving in Iraq. So if you're listening, just drop us a line with your normal address when you're back home, and we'll send it on there.
Indeed. Now, this month, it's another great DVD box set from the people at Network, and this is one I've been looking forward to. It's The Persuaders. Now, The Persuaders has been out on DVD before, but they've really, as they always do at Network, done a real number on this one. They've gone back, they've digitally remastered everything. That's re-remastered, and so everything's really clean and spotless and looks great. There's a documentary, there are commentaries on some of the episodes, and my favourite bit of all, if you don't know The Persuaders, by the way, it's a great series from the 1970s starring Tony Curtis and Roger Moore. As a team of crime-busting troubleshooters, I suppose you could call them. But the best bit of all is that the theme for The Persuaders was a huge hit on record around Europe and in the UK. And on Top of the Pops, they didn't really have anybody. There wasn't a band or anything that could come on Top of the Pops to show them playing the theme tune. So they made a Pan's People video, especially for Top of the Pops, of Pan's People dressed as gangsters driving around London in a car. And that's on there too. So that really sparked the idea for the competition question, which is, who wrote the theme tune for The Persuaders? Goes like this.
Memories flooding back. If you know the answer, and if even if you don't, probably Google once again can be your friend. Send your entries, the composer of the theme tune to The Persuaders, to, as always, multimedia at bfbs.com, and we'll draw the winners out in a month's time.
Multimedia news.
News time now on Multimedia, and an old friend of Multimedia is back on the programme. Barry Collins was a features writer for PC Pro magazine, and he went away. He's been to the Sunday Times, he's been to the Daily Mail, but he's back now at PC Pro as news and features editor. Welcome back, Barry.
Thank you very much.
How come you've come back again?
The great attraction of national newspapers is the lovely money and the long hours, but the long hours took their toll, so I'm back in the magazine fold working much fewer hours.
Fair enough. Okay, first off, batteries for laptops, and it seems that Sony's woes with battery laptops and allegedly exploding battery laptops seems to be continuing.
Yeah, you may remember earlier this summer when it started with Dell and Apple making a massive millions of laptop batteries recalled because there were reports of batteries exploding. There was the infamous one at I think it was a Japanese conference that was pitched all over the internet, and the problem seemed to have died down a little bit until a couple of weeks ago, and Lenovo had a problem, and last week they decided to issue a recall of over 500,000 of their own laptop batteries. And that prompted Sony to announce a universal recall. Sony is the company, has separate divisions. So it has a battery division and a laptop division. And ironically, Sony's laptop division is still deciding whether to obey its own battery division's instructions and recall its own batteries. So it's a complete mess from Sony's point of view.
Will this actually harm Sony as a battery producer?
Almost certainly, because it's Sony, there's this huge amounts of batteries being recalled, and you know, we're talking into mega millions, and most of the big PC makers are involved. So it's certainly not good news for Sony.
What's actually happened? Apparently, it's something to do with flecks of metal or something in the makeup of the battery.
Yeah, if something goes wrong in the manufacturing process, and these when being charged, these flecks of metal can become explosive, and we've seen sort of the odd one or two laptops where it's had quite a catastrophic effect. It has to be said that the instances of this are relatively small. You're talking about sort of one in million kind of odds, but nevertheless, no laptop manufacturer wants to have their machines explode on their customers.
To find out more about that, do have a look at the PC Pro website, which is pcpro.co.uk, or indeed go to your laptop manufacturer's website and to find out more. Intel and AMD are bickering about, we've only just got the hang of dual-core processors. That's a computer chip that has two complete sets of processors in it. And Intel are now talking about releasing quad-core with four processors on one chip.
Yeah, that's right. There's a little bit of a row going on because Intel have released their first quad-core chips. AMD are claiming they're not true quad-core in the fact that they're essentially two dual-core processors wedged together. So it's a 2x2 effectively. AMD has got a true quad-core chip coming early next year, so they claim. So there's a little bit of a row over whether it's quad-core or not. To the consumer, it makes no real difference, to be honest. It's semantics. The two are fighting over four processors or four cores is plenty enough, and most people won't care if it's 2x2 or 4-on-1, to be honest.
It's interesting that not that long ago, it was all about processor speed and how fast your processor goes. This seems to be changing now, and it's not about how fast as much as how many.
Exactly, and in fact, cores are becoming the new megahertz, whereas, you know, five years ago, we knew that a 500 megahertz chip was slower than a 800 megahertz chips. Now the measure is becoming cores. So by the end of next year, we should have 8-core chips. Intel at the recent IDF show actually showed off a prototype with 80 cores on it, which they claim will be on the market within 5 years. So yes, cores are now becoming the new measure of chip speed, if you like.
Fair enough. We talked on the show before about the problems of the new high-density DVD formats where there's two completely incompatible systems coming out in the not-too-distant future, including Blu-ray. Apparently, some progress has been made on a universal disc.
Yeah, some smart guys at Warner Brothers, who obviously have their own movie studio, so it's in their interest to sort of get this right. They've patented a disc that's capable of storing HD DVD, Blu-ray and standard DVD content on the one disc. It basically works on a triple layer. So one layer contains the HD DVD, one contains Blu-ray, one contains the standard DVD. And the idea is that whichever machine you buy, the film will play in that player. So it sort of overcomes the war to some extent.
Do you think that's something that will become universal so that every disc will play in every player again like CDs do?
You'd hope so. The problem is that standards wars, these companies don't talk to each other very much, and it might take somebody like Warner Brothers to bang their heads together, but you know, it's still only at the patent stage, so it's hard to know, but I'm not overly optimistic.
Well, hopefully it'll be some good news for consumers. Broadband speeds have been going up and up, but some of the broadband companies here in the UK have been rapped recently for their advertising for their 8 meg broadband. So when is 8 meg broadband not 8 meg?
It's almost never 8 meg, and that is the problem. This row started in the spring when BT went to its ADSL Max service and started offering speeds of up to 8 megabits per second, and customers almost immediately were complaining that the speeds were barely improved on their previous 2 megabits a second lines, and in some cases much worse. And we've been receiving letters for months from disgruntled broadband customers claiming their speeds aren't up to it. Last month, the ASA actually took some action against Bulldog, the ISP, following a complaint from NTO, ironically, that found that many of its customers couldn't achieve the 8 megabit speed. And in fact, if you live more than 3.5 kilometers from the exchange, you can't possibly achieve anything more than 5 or 6 megabits anyway. So the ASA has now instructed all broadband ISPs to make it clear that speeds are dependent on the distance from your exchange and can vary wildly. They sort of get away with it and they sort of don't. They can still use that weasel phrase up to advertise their services, but the safety warnings have to be issued much more prominently.
So there's no change in the service, just the way they advertise it.
Yeah, they just have to be a bit more upfront with their customers about what the likely speed is. I mean, my own ISP, Zen, clearly advertises that at peak times, you won't get any more than 2 megabits a second, which is what we were on previously. So, you know, the 8 megabits speed is really a bit of a red herring, to be honest.
Okay, and finally, something that I hate, which is DRM, Digital Rights Management. It's something that Microsoft and Sony have been trying to implement for ages, which is so that you can't copy your music and your films and things like that and pass them on to other people, or even you know, make a copy for yourself to use in the car. But apparently somebody's now hacked into that.
Yeah, it happened about a month or so ago, and some hackers found their way around Microsoft's own DRM, and this caused all manner of problems, not least for Sky, who have a broadband service where if you subscribe to their movies or sports services, you can download sport highlights or whole films onto your computer and watch them at your leisure. Sky sort of took the headless chicken approach when the DRM was cracked and decided to pull the entire service. Or most of the service anyway, until Microsoft could patch the DRM. And that took at least 3 or 4 weeks. And so, you know, customers who were in for a legitimate service found their service shut off.
So Sky basically shut the service down. Is this something, is DRM going to be a fact of life, whatever we do in future? Or because there seems to be another movement, which is if you make it affordable and people can download it and there aren't any restrictions, people will pay for it. That's the other argument, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a tough call for the content holders because, you know, for years they've clung viciously onto every last stream revenue they can get, and I think they see that DRM is the only acceptable way of selling music over the internet. And of course, Apple's iTunes uses DRM, and that's always held as the poster boy of the sort of music, digital music world. So I think it's going to be here for a while yet, but there are certainly signs that some nails are being banged into its coffin.
Barry Collins, welcome back to Multimedia, news and features editor of PC Pro. To find out more about these and lots of other news stories besides, have a look at the PC Pro website, which is pcpro.co.uk. Barry, thank you.
Thanks very much.
And that's about it for your all-new time, Multimedia. It's weird, isn't it, having it at a different time, because we've been so used to the old time for so long.
Well, 8 years at the old time, and I'm wondering whether we may have shed some listeners, or perhaps even because the new timings may not suit some of the old listeners, they may have come on to it as a listen again or as a podcast, and if that's the case, welcome. Isn't it easier being able to listen to it as and when you want? And also, of course, we may have gained some listeners too, who are around 9:30 UK time on a Friday evening or 7 o'clock on a Sunday morning UK time. If you're new to the programme, we'd love to hear from you. And that's multimedia@bfbs.com.
And multimedia@bfbs.com is also the address for our fabulous competition. This month it's Persuaders 12 DVD box set. All we want to know is who composed the theme to the Persuaders. Drop us a line, let us know where you are in the world and everything to multimedia@bfbs.com. As I say, time's caught up with us again, so for me, Mark Phillips.
And for me, Dave Raven, talk to you next month. Bye-bye.
Ta-ra.